Who with it now? Welcome to After the Young Pope. Here to discuss everything about the Young Pope and all things Pope related, brought to you by Cherry Coke Zero. joining me again, as always, Jeremy the Ecclesiasti Reisman.
Hello, hello, all young popes and old popes.
And of course, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. Who has not actually seen the show and is not what we're getting on about. No, this is Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. Hello, everyone.
We don't have Chris Hardwick here to discuss after the show.
We don't have Chris Hardwick. That's like his entire career now, isn't it? Is just watching shows and then talking about them in front of an audience. He gets paid fabulously to do it. I want his job.
He's also the co-host of Plinko the Game Show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's just the arc of life. It's where it takes you. It just, you know, people go to Plinko or Pachinko or whatever you want to call it. Konami goes there. Chris Hardwick goes there. Ryan still hasn't said anything.
Just ready to take you guys to the Matthews Bridge whenever you want to go.
Okay, stop looking at tweets from Trill Ballins.
He does Twitter so well, and I'm just not caught up on Young Pope or Westworld, because I haven't started either of them, so I can contribute nothing to this discussion at all.
We're not talking about the Young Pope. We're here to talk about the NFL and the Detroit Lions, even though me and Jeremy both have seen Young Pope. And I liked it. I don't know how Jeremy feels about it. He apparently watched it because of me, which seems like a weird decision, but...
Well, don't flatter yourself. It's HBO. I'm probably going to watch it anyways.
Well, enjoy Jude Law's ass, then. Where do you guys want to start? You want to start with the NFL playoffs, or do you want to start with some Lions news?
Let's do playoffs, since that actually has some substance to it. We'll get to Lions stuff soon, and I know that's what everyone tunes in for, so we'll get to it, I promise.
We're going to be talking about the playoffs on this podcast. We're going to be talking about the coaches out there and the lack thereof from anyone from the Lions organization. Spoiler alert, Terrell Austin is probably returning as your defense coordinator for the Detroit Lions. It looks like he has struck out on both those gigs that he was interviewing for. And a little bit on Brian Callahan and talking about a little fun we had, I think, with some of the Detroit media from earlier last week. But I think we should... Oh, and by the way, the long-awaited sandwich list cast is coming up. So you want to stick around for that, if anything else.
You don't want to miss that.
But we start, as always, with the NFL playoffs. We are on the road to WrestleMania, and the NFL playoffs are headed to the conference championships. And we finally had some good playoff football, I gotta say.
It's about time.
At least one game.
One game, and unfortunately it was the game with the two teams we hate the most.
Yep. Well, who are you guys? Were you guys both pulling for the Packers or to lose for sure?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like it wasn't even a matter of debate, discussion. I had no second thoughts. It was 100%. I was all in for Dak Prescott.
I was rooting for the boy cows, especially in that like furious comeback they were waging. But I'm not mad to see them eliminated. I think that's my best
But are you more upset to see Aaron Rodgers advance?
It's the ultimate question.
I mean, I'm more upset now because it puts in jeopardy the idea of the Falcons going to the playoffs just because he's playing so well.
The over-under has moved to 60, by the way. 60 yeah. points is the over-under for this game.
Is the total for the NFC Championship, which is beautiful.
Who's favored? I haven't looked at that.
It's in the Georgia Dome.
The Falcons. Falcons are favored.
Yeah, yeah, they're at home. Last game to ever be played in the Georgia Dome. They're moving to that new Megatron Stadium next year.
The Mercedes-Benz Superdome Part 2.
I do not think they would appreciate it being called that.
The Super Duper Dome.
It really is sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, though. They're going to have two stadiums.
Yeah, really? It's kind of like how AT&T has like the San Francisco Giants ballpark, and then they have AT&T Stadium. Like, right. You know.
But the Falcons and Saints are bitter, bitter, bitter rivals.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's crazy.
That makes it even better. But, I mean, yeah, I would have liked to see him eliminated. But at the same time, like, my entire timeline was having a love fest with him. And I can't stay mad through all that stuff. And, again, the pain was dulled by the fact that the Cowboys are eliminated.
It's just, it's hard for me. I mean, I'll take the enjoyment out of a good football game over anything, really. So I was happy that it was, yeah, a very competitive, very exciting game. But I can't stand every time Rodgers leaves the pocket and throws a needle right on the mark towards the sidelines. It kills me. It kills me over and over again because I've felt that happen to the Lions over and over again. And every time it happens, it's just reliving that same feeling, and it makes me want to throw up. And it won him the game again on Sunday, and it's probably going to happen against the Falcons next Sunday, because who is equipped to stop Aaron Rodgers? I said this last week. Best chance to stop Aaron Rodgers was the Giants, and they gave up 31 points to Green Bay. I don't think anyone's stopping him right now.
I mean, on the same front, though, like, some of those penalties in the games against the Cowboys were just so dumb. Like, okay. First things first, I'm going to quote someone I retweeted earlier. Good and very reasonable that coming into the huddle and leaving it is the same yardage penalty as an illegal helmet hit.
Yeah.
And then the second part is that I can't... People are making out Rodgers to be brilliant because he takes advantage of those 12 men on the field penalties. And I'm sorry, that's stupid.
What, wait, hold on. Clarify what the stupid part of it is, because I think I agree with you.
Well, the stupid part, okay, so there's two stupid parts. One is people cheering for them. I'll get to them in a second. The main stupid part is that it's like hockey during a line change. The guy's going off the field. He's not impacting anything. He's not going to rush back onto the field. If he did, you call the penalty then. But if it's clear he's not going to be interfering with the play at all, let him get off the field. Don't leave this loophole out here for them to be just ruthlessly exploited because a defender wasn't fast enough to get off the field. It's already bad enough as it is. It's a weird netherworld between up-tempo where it's like, yeah, you do that to prevent defensive substitution and letting the defense substitute. It's like a middle ground that just makes no goddamn sense. The second part I object to is just, again, people thinking that's brilliant because, I'm sorry, that's like rooting for a billionaire to use an offshore tax haven. Like, there's nothing brilliant about it. It's a loophole. Fucking close it.
Fair enough. We do agree.
Yeah. Like, it was just frustrating to watch that. But hey, man, it's in the rule book. I only hope that he does it enough that eventually Roger Goodell gets off his fat ass, stops eating pizza, and like changes it. But I know that's not going to happen.
He's clearly not team pizza over everything. Roger Goodell, we do not accept him as one of us.
Hold up. No, but he does do the pizza. Remember, like, during the Ray Rice scandal, it was like, you know, no more pizza until we have this solved.
I don't remember that, and I don't acknowledge it.
Okay. I remember the pizza.
He probably said subs.
Shut. Don't do that on the eve of the sandwich list, Cass. This is the height of probably Team Sub.
I'm teasing it. I'm starting to ignite the fuse here.
You are. So besides from the Packers-Cowboys game, which was incredibly fun, but I think made us all at home very frustrated, Lions fans, like, I want to join in loving Aaron Rodgers, and I can't. We can't do that. It's terrible.
And to me, the reason why I'm focusing on that game more so than any other game is just, I don't, like, the AFC is not interesting to me at all. Right now.
Right.
Because this week it will be, though. It's going to change this week.
I mean, right? No, man. The game itself will be interesting, but I don't care who, like, Steelers, Patriots, it's the same franchise over and over again coming out of the AFC. It's boring. I don't, that's why I was really pulling for the Chiefs, even though they're kind of boring football to watch. I just want a new team
in there. Their defense is exciting, so I was kind of pulling for that. But, I mean, yeah, Pittsburgh doesn't really get me up after 6 field goals.
Phrasing.
You've been watching Archer, so you're really into phrasing right now.
I just got into it.
Yeah. Hey.
I'm a little late, which means I'll probably watch Young Pope in like 4 years.
Like 2020.
When it's in its fifth season.
Fifth season, yeah, exactly. We'll just all be Pope heads, and you'll finally be catching up with us. But, okay, so let's talk about those other games. So, Atlanta-Seattle looks close there for a second. Atlanta, though, like, I'm seeing some people already putting Atlanta in the Super Bowl.
That's crazy talk.
Which is clearly premature. Like, have you not watched Aaron Rodgers for the past 8 weeks?
Are you not familiar with the history of the Atlanta Falcons?
And, I mean, their defense is bad. It's really
very bad.
And I know people are like, well, they held Seattle. Well, Seattle doesn't have that good of an offense. We should acknowledge that, because their offensive line was really bad, and any team with a good defensive line, with some good pass rushers, can get to Russell Wilson, make him make some mistakes, and maybe actually, you know, stop the run like certain other teams didn't do. So I think Atlanta's a pretty flawed team. Obviously, the Packers have the same issues. They're not a very good team on defense, especially in the secondary, and they had a couple of injuries on Sunday. I don't know what the current status of those guys are, but they're banged up secondary, so, I mean, I fully expect this to get very close to that 60 over-under line, because two bad defenses, two MVP-style quarterbacks, it's going to be a shootout, y'all.
Can I interject here with a question about Seattle's kind of future? And you guys can answer this really quickly, but sure. Robert Mays pointed out from The Ringer that, you know, Seattle's cap distribution is so, like, unique because they spent a lot of money on big pieces on their defense. And then obviously they paid Russell Wilson, but they still have like roughly like $40 million in cap space next year because they're the bottom five in spending on their offensive line, their wide receivers, and their running back. Like, I think that they could get by with like Thomas Rawls, like as a running back. And I think that they could get, or, you know, like, you know, CJ Procise or something. Their wide receiver corps, I mean, you know, if Tyler Lockett comes back, you know, that was a pretty bad injury he had. But, like, you kind of get what you pay for, right? Like, their offensive line is so bad, and I saw so many people on Twitter that were like, oh, like, this is the window shutting. Like, Seattle's windows is closing. There were quite a few people on Twitter that were already, you know, jumping to that conclusion. And a stat like this makes me think that that's anything but true. Like, you could go out in free agency, look at what the Oakland Raiders did with their offensive line in one offseason, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys see Seattle's window closing or no?
Go ahead, Jeremy. I think the general reason why people are thinking that is because, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the narrative surrounding Seattle was like, they're getting all this production out of their young draft picks that are still on their first contract. And now all those players are suddenly not on their first contract. They're on their second contract. So everyone else just kind of assumes that they're in kind of cap hell. They won't be able to go out and make a free agency splash like that. But I wasn't really aware of their cap situation. I think that's why people were saying those things. If they have $40 million in cap space, you know, that defense is probably only going to get better next year with you know,
Earl Thomas coming back. Yeah.
Earl Thomas coming back, first of all. And yeah, I mean, they have the same pieces. Sure, they're paying them all a little more, but now, you know, they can shift some of the focus, some of where they were lacking before. If they got $40 million in cap space, they can make a lot of small changes that'll make a big difference.
I asked Field Goals when we played them, when we did our five questions when the Lions were playing Seattle. I even asked them about this question about the cap and, you know, if they'd lose anyone. And he told me, no, they've signed up, as you guys say, they've signed up their main core. They've signed up Thomas Wilson, you know, Sherman, Chancellor, Cliff Averill, all the rest. So, yeah, I mean, he's basically saying, like, they can probably just float with the cap situation. They can probably round it up, and I know they probably might be behooved to maybe draft an offensive lineman in the next draft. I don't think they did that last year, did they? I can't remember who they took first in the first round last year. But, I mean, they can definitely find ways to kind of fix it up, but, man, you got to do something. They're good through at least 2018. After that, I don't know what's going to happen with them. I think it can keep going, though. I mean, it's just one blip in otherwise, you know, a stellar run. They still had one playoff win. It was against the Lions, but they definitely, you know, they're still, it's not like they're just, you know, limping into the playoffs and then getting knocked out.
Yeah, that's true. And their first round pick last year was Jermaine Ifedi, the tackle from Texas A&M. So,
oh, okay.
I mean,
so they did draft a lineman. He was all right. I think he can do better though. Like,
sure,
he can grow.
Yeah, I mean, I think their cap space combined with the fact that they've done a really good job scouting and drafting, I don't see their window closing anytime soon. I think that's a lot of like reactionary Twitter just kind of jumping
so
their boat, you know.
I mean, it's what we do every year when the Patriots get bounced, right?
It's what we do with every team, right? Because
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Suddenly, you know, we saw almost every game in the playoffs be a blowout, or at least a 2-score game. So the losers of each of those teams right now feels like they didn't even belong in the playoffs, right? It's not
right.
Just the Lions fans. It's Houston doesn't feel like it, even though they just won.
Speaking of the Lions fans, like, wasn't that was the whole thing? Like, the script completely flipped after the Lions got bounced out of the playoffs. People got mad at the Lions and wanted to, once again, fire Caldwell and trade Matt Stafford and all the rest because, yeah, when you lose a playoff series, it sucks. It sucks because your season's over.
But, I mean, if we had, what, 7 head coaching openings this year? Six or seven?
Yeah.
If we set the bar at what some of these playoff fan bases think once they're bounced, at what deserves to be ousted as a coaching regime, like, we would have 20 openings per year. And, you know, no one to fill those roles because everyone wants the untouchable guys that aren't even coming back to the NFL or aren't coming out of college because Nick Saban doesn't want to coach pro football. Get that out of your minds, idiots.
Why the hell would he want to do that? Alabama pays for his houses. I hope you realize that Alabama boosters pay for Nick Saban's houses. Is any fan base in the NFL ready to do that for Nick Saban? Guarantee you ain't. But speaking of coaches, we should take a break and come back. I do want to talk about in the next segment some of the coaching carousel that has kind of moved around, and some of the moves that were made and some that really weren't made, and just earlier surprises. So stick around. We'll be right back. We are going to be talking about the Lions next segment. Continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, this is the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, here to talk about the Detroit Lions, the NFL, not HBO's The Young Pope. Not yet, at least.
Well, we'll see about that.
We'll see about it. Not yet. That was my qualifier. I made it very clear. All right, so we kind of left off last segment talking about the NFL playoffs, and just, you know, it's a bad feeling when you get bounced after a playoff series. It always is. And just to kind of put a bow on that, I'm looking at the teams who like got bounced and everything. The only ones I really see the window closing on is probably Houston, because I didn't think they had much of a window to begin with.
But, I mean, that defense isn't going to get any worse with J.J. Watt in the lineup next year.
And Jadeveon Clowney finally showed up.
Right.
We cannot forget that. He's getting better. He's finally showing the reason why he was a first overall pick. Like,
yeah, but my point as I was making towards the break last segment was just that a lot of these teams probably feel like they didn't actually belong because of they were got wiped off the floor. And that's a silly way to think of things. One, because it's just a single game. Anything can happen in a single game. You make a couple small errors and suddenly it's a 2-3 point deficit. And you lose a game that maybe you wouldn't have lost without those errors. Two is that, sorry, you made the playoffs. You deserve to be there. We talked about this a lot with the Lions. If you're in the playoffs, you deserve to be there. That's an accomplishment. Certainly it's not the accomplishment that every team wants, you know, the final accomplishment that every team wants, but you made it past that level. Sure, there's another level to go, and a lot of these teams aren't there yet, but, like, don't blow it all up, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, the other thing to keep in mind is, once again, even though there were quite a few blowouts, the playoffs are random. Like, everything about them are largely random. So I can't fault too much. The only thing that wasn't really random was watching Houston get its doors blown in by New England.
And even in that case, it was
relatively close at halftime.
It was close. I was shocked with that result. I thought Shea Serrano was going to, like, melt down.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is what Jeremy said, is that some of these teams maybe felt like they didn't belong. I mean, i.e., you know, the Texans or the Lions. But at the same time, Miami's another good example. Or you had, you know, Oakland, who wasn't clearly at full strength without Derek Carr. They were a completely different team without him.
They're going to be back.
Right?
Yeah.
Houston is a kind of interesting case to me, though, because, you know, they have AJ Bouye, who is the second highest graded cornerback according to PFF, and he's going to be, you know, the man to go out and pay big bucks to in free agency if you're looking for a shutdown cornerback. Because he's relatively young. He played so well this season. But the Texans defense, I feel like he's a huge, you know, instrumental part of it. You know, they do have a lot of attack, though. Like, so I think that's something that going forward, you know, you get J.J. Watt back, you have Jadeveon Clowney, you have, Whitney Mercilus, who played really well, too. So, I mean, if you have, like, a three-headed monster in terms of, you know, generating pressure off the edges, I think Houston might be a team that maybe you could even come back and, you know, bounce back, I guess. But, interesting case with a lot of teams that, you know, kind of limped into the playoffs. There's an opportunity for them to be back next year.
All right. With that, we should probably shift over gears a second to, again, the teams who have fired their coaches, as we were talking about. Not, you know, this theoretical world where we turn over 20 coaches, but the real world. The world of the real. And that involves, on the Lions side of things, it means Terrell Austin is back as your defensive coordinator. Did not get the Rams job. What was the other job he was interviewing for,
Chargers.
Jeremy? Chargers.
Los Angeles Chargers.
I don't think he ever officially interviewed for the Rams, but he did for the Chargers, and the Chargers passed over him.
We haven't talked about the Chargers moving to LA. Jeremy, you're in LA. What is the excitement there for the Chargers coming to town? Is it palpable?
You know how we haven't talked about the Chargers moving to LA? Neither has anyone here.
I think someone pointed out they're going to be the fourth most popular football team, barring any other sports team. Fourth most popular football team. And to be honest, there's probably some other LA school besides UCLA and USC that they will be less popular than.
So there's got to be a prep school out there, like a high school prep team out there.
Like a high school. Yeah, exactly.
I think the Cowboys practice somewhere around here. They're probably a bunch of Cowboys fans somewhere around here.
Cowboys fans
MLS
everywhere.
MLS is trying to bring back a second team to LA, and that's probably already more popular than the Chargers in LA.
Well,
speaking of that, they're going to be. I heard they might be playing at StubHub Center.
No,
which is where the Galaxy play, which is like 27,000 people.
I think that's like confirmed though. I think that's what they're going to do.
Are you kidding me?
No, but this is
the Chargers.
Yeah. So the thing is that they can expand it out to 30,000. Like they can make it max capacity at 30,000, which is still really tiny in comparison.
That's still smaller than most Division I college schools.
Right. Which I think, Jeremy, if you're still, you know, in that area around, you know, that time next year, you should definitely try to get a ticket, because I think that'd be so cool to get like that kind of unique experience about, you know, going to see a football game.
Yeah, like me going to see a high school game in Texas,
or
about that same environment.
Or a college game at a very historic venue with a woman character. Have we not mentioned Nora on this podcast?
Don't say her by name.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even catch up what you were...
All right, coaches. So Terrell Austin struck out or didn't interview or whatever. He's back as your defensive coordinator. Real quick, just how do we feel about that? Because, like, I think as we pointed out last podcast, the Lions weren't going to get another defensive coordinator to place him and be a hire from the inside.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings on this. I think a lot of Lions fans do, and rightfully so. you can pull the excuse all you want, you know, and it's valid in some cases that the Lions had injuries to their best defensive play. Like, every single one of their best defensive players this year went through a long period where they were injured, whether it was Ezekiel Ansah, Darius Slay, DeAndre Levy. Pretty much everyone had some issues there. And what I find, I kind of find interesting that both myself and I think a lot of Lions fans are kind of at ends with themselves with, is that we all talked about how Bob Quinn built a lot of depth this offseason. So he brought in a few safeties, he brought in some cornerback depth. But when it comes down to the injuries, we'd say, well, Tarr Austin didn't have the talent. So we can excuse his 32nd ranked defense in DVOA, or we can say, well, you know, they were giving up all these yards, they were so poorly ranked in advanced metrics, but we went 8 games without giving up more than 20 points. I don't know if I buy any of that, to be honest. I think Tarr Austin had a bad year. I think this year definitely sank his value across the league, and I'm wary about that returning next year, to be honest. I know he's a well-respected guy in the locker room. I just don't know how innovative of a mind he is defensively, and I'm a little worried.
Like,
about
all those blitzes he would dial up, none of them were getting home near the end of the year. Like, the pass rush was just atrocious.
Yeah,
it wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. No. It was. It's been largely talent based. I agree. And then the Lions also apparently, news coming out today that they have stopped interviews with another member of the Lions coaching staff. No, not Bob Quinn. Not Jim Bob Cooter. Not the Cooter. His replacement at quarterbacks coach, Brian Callahan. People were apparently interested in looking at him as an offensive coordinator. So, what do you guys make of that?
Earlier, I want to say right near the end of the regular season, I know this is kind of apples to oranges a little bit, but the reports about the Packers front office member Elliot Wolf not being, granted the permission to interview for like the Lions GM position last year, before Bob Quinn eventually got it, because I think a lot of teams were tapping Wolf as a guy who could potentially be in charge of some other NFL franchises, and kind of some rumblings going on in Green Bay about how he was unhappy about Green Bay's decision to, nix his interview opportunities to go elsewhere. I don't think this is a super good look on the franchise. I mean, it's never good to, kind of limit people's, mobility in terms of, vertical mobility, I guess, if they're trying to, gain a promotion or, anything of, I guess, that nature. Not to get too Jim Caldwell-ish, but I don't know. I don't think it's a very good look on the franchise to restrict those type of people, because then, I don't know, going forward now, it seems maybe the Lions might not be a destination that, if you are going to be like a position-oriented coach, maybe it makes it a less desirable position? I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how pervasive this is, because this kind of even slipped under, I guess, our own radar a little bit.
Yeah, and the rules aren't really that clear. I know Jeremy tried to write something up about this, and it's kind of unclear when the block came or what exactly the job was for. Sure. So.
Yeah, that's the thing, because we don't know exactly when it happened. Obviously, coaching searches started right after the season ended, in some cases even before that. So the Lions obviously weren't going to give up Callahan while they were still in the playoffs, and it's not clear if that's when the requests came in. Right now, there's only a report that one team reached out, and we don't know what team it was. I think it was Dave Burkett who said it was an AFC team that was inquiring. That's all we know. And there's still some teams that don't have an offensive coordinator. I think Buffalo is still looking for one. Jacksonville is looking for one. And we all know who we're hoping for in Jacksonville, but we'll leave the Chip Kelly discussion for another day.
And I mean, you brought this up in the article too. Like, I think Kyle Shanahan's probably getting poached for some head coaching gig somewhere. So open up the Falcons offensive coordinator job. If they don't just promote from within.
He's definitely been linked to the San Francisco job, which is the only one out there at the moment. But that's the only one left. Yeah, that's the only one left.
Like, I don't think any other coaching positions are going to be changed.
Probably not. But this is another kind of interesting name that just kind of popped up out of nowhere. Callahan wasn't with the team before last year. They just brought him in after the Broncos won that Super Bowl. No one's really brought his name up. I wasn't even really aware that he was the quarterback's coach. That hadn't really produced on my radar. And we talk about Stafford almost having an MVP type of season. We kind of gave all of that credit to Cooter or even Jim Caldwell, because, you know, he was the quarterback whisperer when we hired him. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously the Lions think very highly of him, and apparently they do across the league, because he's a mind, I guess, that people are tapping for a future offensive coordinator, but it's not someone we've ever really talked about. And I obviously it's hard for us to know tangentially what he's done to help make Matthew Stafford better, but I think we can all agree that even, you know, counting in how Matthew Stafford finished 2015, he still looked like he brought it to another level, at least for the first 10, 12 games of this season. I think it's just kind of an interesting development.
Well, okay, last bit here. Obviously, the two big names this offseason were Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia. Obviously, the Patriots are still in the midst of their run. They're playing for the AFC Championship. They're probably playing for the Super Bowl, if we're being honest about it. But, you know, actually, probably don't know. The Steelers might beat them, but I think they're playing very well. But, again, as we pointed out, there's only one head coaching vacancy now. And I know some Lions fans are probably looking at that, and it's like, well, we could have had Patricia or McDaniels. We just had to wait. So, I don't know. This is an argument. Suddenly, I realized I brought this up, and this is a dirty road to get down.
Well, I kind of view it the opposite, to be honest. Rumor is that Josh McDaniels took himself out of the running in the 49ers job, which I think is probably a smart move, because that franchise is a mess. If you think the Lions are a mess and they're accepting mediocrity,
oh fuck, just it's a shit show.
Go down the rabbit hole in San Francisco and enjoy the ride there.
Or look at the Colts, who want to bring in Peyton Manning to the front office.
Right. And yeah, that becomes my ultimate point, because the Colts also reached out to John Gruden. So all of you people with their pie in the sky fantasies about which coordinators or coaches you're going to bring in, teams actually try that sometimes, and guess what? It doesn't work.
It's always the dumbest teams. The Colts are the original fail sons of the NFL. Never forget that. Don't let two generational quarterbacks that have fallen to their lap distract you from that fact. The Colts suck. That the Ursays suck, and they have always sucked.
Yeah, and my point ultimately being that it's not just grab a name and throw them on your team, because it has to be mutual, first of all. Second of all, guess what? People who know these coordinators inside and out from inside the NFL don't exactly see them the way that you see them. They have probably a better knowledge. So the fact that people weren't chomping at the bit for a guy like Matt Patricia or Josh McDaniels probably is a sign that maybe they aren't ready to either rejoin the NFL coaching ranks or to make that leap. That's what I take from this coaching search year. I mean, look around the league. How many of those coaches that were hired were someone that you would feel comfortable with the Lions? You'd get excited about it for replacing Jim Caldwell. Any? Is there anyone? Because I don't think there is. I don't think I would be excited for any single one of those guys.
They don't really move the needle for me either, but I'm a Caldwell slappy.
I've had enough of Patriots coordinators. That's my only thing. If there was some guy somewhere else, I'd be probably more excited for it. Just don't try to sell me on a Pats coordinator.
What about a 31-year-old? Does that excite you?
You're talking about...
I set you up, Ryan. I teed you up and you didn't take it.
Nah, I didn't want to do it. It's not about ageism. It's not about ageism. Oh. It's not about racism.
What is this? I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's about placism. That's a Willie Beeman reference.
This is a new 2017 Ryan Matthews. Make the ageist joke.
No ageist jokes.
Hand it to him on a platter.
No Butterfinger.
Oh, wow.
Wow. All right, let's take a break here. We've gone long here, but it's time for ListCast. It's back, baby.
I'm not
this
ready.
This time, it's... you should be. This is a long-awaited ListCast. We've been wanting to do this for a while. I teased it during the season. It's the off-season, week 2. We're busting it out. Sandwiches. We'll be right back. All right, gentlemen, it's back. It's been put on ice for a little bit. Actually, it hasn't been that long because we did a holiday movies list cast not long ago.
Right.
But it comes back up every now and then, and it's list cast. And this one has been on ice for about a month. I have wanted to talk about it for a month. And it was viciously overruled during the season by Jeremy Reisman, our fearless leader. And before we knew it, we were doing our holiday movie list cast instead. And by and large, I think Twitter has forgotten about this. So back in middle of December, the website Food Republic does these. They do these wonderful kind of graphics with a bunch of cool stuff listed. But they put out their list of top 40 sandwiches ranked. And just as a preamble to this, because maybe if you're not part of Twitter, well, I'll embed it in the post, but in the Pride Detroit post, but it was a really shitty list. Let's just say that right now. It was a really fucking awful list.
I mean, I feel like it's so bad that it was purposely so bad so that it would gain so much traction, and it absolutely worked.
I think you're being too cynical about it, bud.
Maybe, but like, liverwurst is on the list. That's all you need to know.
Okay,
liverwurst
is
on the list.
The bottom of this list is atrocious as well as the top. We'll talk about the top in a second. Also, right behind liverwurst, cucumber tea sandwiches. I'm sorry, cucumber sandwiches aren't fucking sandwiches. Bologna's on this list. I'm pretty sure you could find more sandwiches to replace bologna.
Is it weird to me that the most objectionable thing about the cucumber tea sandwich that they have listed is that they have the crust cut off?
Yeah.
Come on. Be an adult.
When I see a cucumber sandwich on a list, like, it just makes me think of The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. And and it just makes me think of, like, sandwiches I'll never eat because I'll never be invited to those kind of parties because I'm not part of the 1%. Sure. So it's just an awful addition to the bottom of the list. But then there's a lot of sandwiches that are way too low on the list that should be much higher.
Well, let's talk about the top of the list, because their top four is just, I mean, the top of the list is fucking atrocious too. Do you want to start with number one or number two? Both are objectionable to me.
Number two is a little bit less objectionable than number one, though.
No.
Yeah.
No. There are so many better sandwiches. Oh, we're starting to get into our list cast, aren't we?
A little bit, but trust me, neither of these two sandwiches made my top five.
Number two, grilled cheese sandwich. You're telling me you can't find better sandwiches to put above a grilled cheese?
No. Well, absolutely you can. I'm just saying that it's less objectionable than what's at number one.
Yes.
Sure. And I love what's at number one, but not enough to put it at number one, and that is a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich, or any breakfast sandwich for that matter.
Too high. Far too high.
Whoever put this together, too, also has an obsession of eggs, too, because croque madame is on here, which has an egg. Egg salad is on here, which, I mean, just fucking kill me.
Yeah, like, I mean, I get the grilled cheese thing, because it's like, it's suddenly a wave. There are grilled cheese trucks, and you can fuck around with 10 different kinds of cheeses. And sure, it's fine.
Different kinds of bread.
For someone who fucking hates mozzarella sticks, I actually like grilled cheese a little more than I probably should.
Oh, Reno's not going to listen to this, or I was going to say. I thought he might listen to it and get you in shit.
Don't you find it's much too reliant upon having a bowl or a cup of tomato soup with it?
Yeah,
at times, yeah.
Because all those trucks also partner with tomato soup.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, like, as a standalone sandwich, a grilled cheese is. I'm not trying to poke fun at grilled cheese or the people who eat them, but like, come on, it's like, the most basic sandwich you can make.
Right. It's like I have nothing left in my fridge except for bread and cheese.
I'm trying to.
This is a step. It's a step above stovetop mac and cheese.
Yeah.
my point was. Like, you can at least try to dress up a grilled cheese. I don't know what you can do with a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. You can get one of those at fucking 7-Eleven. They're dumb.
They are dumb.
I like breakfast sandwiches, but I'm not putting it at number one. So I'm not even putting them in my list cast. So let's start right now. Now that we've got the bitching about this stupid list out of the way, some of these I'm not even sure are real. Like, they have tonkatsu sandwich on here. I know that's like a real sandwich, but kind of cheating when you're putting in something no fucking American has ever eaten. I'm sorry.
Oh, but before we get into the list cast too, we have not talked about this.
Okay, real quick.
The bagel. Like, is the bagel, like, is that an acceptable sandwich?
Yeah, yeah. I eat sandwiches with bagels all the time.
A bagel sandwich, yes, but they have bagels with lox, and I actually don't consider bagels and lox a sandwich because most of the time you eat that open.
You face. Eat that open face.
No, I eat them closed faced.
Well,
you're an animal.
My people don't.
I'm an animal for not eating an open face sandwich. Okay.
Toledo swamp monster.
That's too much bread in one bite. You gotta really have the locks come out. Yeah.
Like, you're just hiding everything, like, amongst, like, a big ball of bread you're chomping around in your mouth.
Boiled bread.
All right.
Let's get on to the list cast. Okay. All right. So we were originally going to, like, do this at, like, we were going to introduce, like, putting in an unranked bottom five into our list cast to kind of get back to the days when we were doing top 10, but we just had no time to prepare. So we just, we still only have top five. We're going to expand the list cast eventually, but let's start. Ryan, let's start with your 4 and 5.
Okay. My number five, should we mention where they rank in the Food Republic list?
Sure.
Yes. If we haven't mentioned it before, let's put them there.
Sure.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
My number five was actually number 23 on the Food Republic list and is the French dip sandwich. Roast beef sandwich dipped in au jus sauce. I mean, it's a great sandwich. I mean, I think I really like the I like some of the versatility and the different kind of cheeses you can put in there with the actual roast beef on the sandwich and the different kind of rolls you can go with. But I don't know, just like dunking that sandwich, like in. It's like a really American sandwich because you just take it and you dunk it in this vat of like rendered juices that have probably been sitting somewhere for like a long time. And then the bread gets soaked up and the meat catches some of it too. So phrasing Ryan. But yeah, the French dip sandwich is my number five. My number four is a little bit more traditional, and it's because I ate them so much as a kid. And it belongs in my list. Number four is the tuna melt. Big fan of the tuna melt sandwich.
What was that on the... It was number 10 on the Food Republic.
Yeah, it was number 10. The tuna melt sandwich. It's a staple of any great sandwich.
Absolutely.
Tuna salad, cheese.
Right.
Great.
Real quick before we continue, there are a couple more problems with the Food Republic list. So, ground rules again. We don't have, like... They have, like, lobster roll on here. I'm sorry, it's not a sandwich. We're not getting into the hot dog thing. It has to be on two pieces of bread or like a hoagie roll. It cannot be in a bun. I love Euros. Euros are amazing. They don't belong on a sandwich list. And also like Italian sub and po' boy. Those are classifications of sandwiches.
If po' boy made your top five, I'll slap you.
Well, I have a version of a po' boy in my top five, but I have made it specific. It's a specific one. It's not just po' boy. Because po' boy, that can be fish or shrimp, or it can be... I mean, I had one at Mother's in New Orleans with, like, the debris and ham. Like, po' boy is a whole classification of sandwiches.
All right.
So, I guess since I got into mine, I might as well go, then.
Yeah, what's number five, Chris?
Well, my number five is actually... It is a little lower than the one I was talking about. But my number five is the Cubano. And that ranked at 13 for Food Republic. I love Cubans. I love Cuban sandwiches. They are very...
I love Cubans.
Well, are you going to hit me a phrasing? Are you going to hit me with phrasing again? Look, I'm not huge on the mustard with it. But, I mean, you do that with that kind of stuff. But, I mean, you go to a place that has, like, the really good pulled pork to put on them. And they're fantastic. They're wonderful. I think the last place I ate them was actually up in Monroe, Michigan. A little diner called Julie's up there near in town itself. So you ever head up that way, go to Julie's, get their Cuban sandwich. It's very good.
See, I'm with you. I love the Cuban sandwich, but the pickles and the mustard are so overpowering in that sandwich.
Oh, I like pickles.
That they ruin it for me. Like that's all I end up tasting.
It's a very poignant sandwich. You need to have the right balance, which is why I really like that Julie's one. And then at number four for me is a specific type of po' boy, and that is a muffuletta sandwich. If you don't know what muffuletta is, it's a sesame bread It is a specific type of like olive topping on it, and just mixed meats. It's kind of the cross between generally po' boy and like Italian sandwich. And I mean, you can put it on sesame bread, so it's technically not a po' boy, but it's a very New Orleans type of sandwich. And I enjoy it. I enjoy muffaletta. It didn't even rank on the 40 sandwiches for Food Republic, but I enjoy it. And if you can find it, it's a treat. Again, kind of, Jeremy probably would like it because he doesn't like pickles to begin with, so I don't even know how you would take to olives.
I do not like olives.
Okay. Go ahead with your 4 and 5.
Well, I guess I'm going to kick things off controversially because I have a lobster roll as my number 5. Because that is a sandwich. I thought when we were saying no controversial sandwiches, first of all, lobster roll doesn't have to be on a hot dog bun necessarily.
Yes, it does.
No. I've seen it on a sub like.
The traditional hot dog bun is in the traditional New England lobster roll is in a hot dog bun. Back me up on this, Ryan.
Not all the ones that I've eaten.
I've never had a lobster roll, so I can't
really
get into this fight.
We need to get you in on them. They're good.
They are good. They're very good. I prefer the ones that are a little more on the buttery side than the mayonnaise side. There's kind of like two different fields in terms mm-hmm. of what lobster roll comes in. I'm not a big mayo guy.
I was going to say it's kind of in that like, you know, chicken salad, tuna salad territory.
Exactly.
You got to be careful with the amount of mayo. Yeah.
Right. Because most of those types of sandwiches or tuna salads, that sort of stuff grosses me out. So tuna melt, I kind of cringed when you said that one.
Oh, but I like chicken salad.
Then my number 4 is also the French dip sandwich. I agree with everything Ryan said. It's melty, it's warm, but you get that soggy bread. I like it when it's like, you get that crusty bread, but you soften it up a little bit in that au jus, and then maybe have a little bit of like grilled onions in there as well. That's a good sandwich.
Is this the only time that soggy bread is appealing or appeasing? Is
yeah,
when it's dipped in au jus?
Yeah.
So I didn't have this on my top 5 at all, the French dip, but to me, that's because it's just beef on a sandwich, it's just beef and bread in the au jus, so.
That's how good it is, that's all it needs.
Yeah.
Ryan, why don't you give us your 3 and 2?
Oh, already? I thought we went reverse order. Fine,
oh, okay.
Fine,
we
we're breaking list cast rules left and right.
All right, man.
Number 3? Ready for this? Pull your top off. The peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
No!
Now, here's the thing with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I've seen it done up. I've seen it done down. I've even eaten a crustable here and there. Or an uncrustable. What are they called?
Uncrustable. It's uncrustable. Yeah,
yeah.
Something like that.
Originally... And I know this is kind of weird because I poked fun at the cucumber tea sandwiches, but like PB&J's used to be kind of like high society. Like that's where like they originated from was like in like tea rooms. But then all of a sudden, like, you know, eventually as like life happened, PB&J's just became like a staple of like every kid's lunch. And it like when you're making a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it takes a lot of time to master it. And once you find that jelly to peanut butter ratio, and as a person who is a huge fan of peanut butter and peanut buttery things, I gotta love the peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
This is your methadone to quitting quitting Butterfingers.
Food Republic has it at 24, by the way.
Let me tell you what, I was a pretty large child at one point because one of my friends. He was actually the first friend I ever like went over to his house and like had like a play date or anything. His mom made him a peanut butter and butter sandwich.
Oh,
God, man.
Oh no.
I adopted those into my diet. And
I mean, my mom used to always feed me like salami and Velveeta sandwiches.
Oh.
So
oh my. Well,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, before you get into your number two, I think we're all wondering the question that comes along with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Crunchy or smooth?
Oh, hold on.
Smooth.
It's changed over time, because as an adult, now I am definitely partial to the crunchy peanut butter.
Attaboy.
Okay.
Attaboy. Okay. we dodged the minor bullet.
Ryan's two.
Are you kidding
me? All right.
I love the crunchity. I love the crunchity peanut buttery. My number two. It was really hard distinguishing whether or not it was the number one or the number two, but I just had such an experience with my number one that I had to end up putting number two where it was. And the number two is the BLT. Now, see, the BLT, it might be a little boring, but I think, like, where it kind of picks up a lot of points for me is its versatility. Even though, like, the staple is only, yes, bacon, lettuce, and tomato, I think that there, like, I've just seen so many different, like, variations of it. And in terms of how you can kind of spice things up, in terms of, like, what kind of mayo you put on it, or I've seen, like, seasoned...
The type of bacon, too.
Right.
The type of bacon, too, and how much bacon.
Yeah, yeah, it can definitely change, like, the flavor profiles and everything, too. So, I don't know. I just think that, like, it's so, like, minimalistic, but at the same time, you can kind of have these different variations of the middle ingredient. So, BLT number two.
All right. Jeremy, do you want to do yours or should I?
I can jump in here.
Okay.
My number three, ranked 29th on Food Republic, the Monte Cristo. That is a tasty-ass sandwich. That turns something fairly boring, a ham and turkey sandwich, into something much more delicious. They deep fry it, put a little powdered sugar on there, and give you a little jam dipping sauce. Hell that, yeah!
My dad used to eat these, and it just seems like overkill to me.
It's like breakfast and lunch mixed into one with a little bit of dessert in there. Woo! Give me that all day.
I would say I think we could have done a bottom five here because there are a lot of sandwiches you guys are listing that would be on my bottom five. But yeah.
Hey, I've never had a Monte Cristo.
Well, I'll show you the way, like I showed you Atlanta and I showed you Archer and I showed you Nathan for You. I'll show you the way.
So, by way of showing me a ton of television shows, you will now show me how to eat sandwiches.
I'm an expert number on two. TV shows and sandwiches. My number two, bringing up my Jewish origins here, call it a Reuben, call it a corned beef sandwich, whatever you want. Corned beef sandwich with give me some, I prefer coleslaw instead of sauerkraut. Throw some Russian dressing on there. You got yourself a delicious sandwich. You don't have to do the rye. You don't have to go Jewish rye on me. You can go like a nice French bread. Delicious. Corned beef is the pinnacle of sandwich meats.
What if they tried doing it with pastrami instead of corned beef?
That's fine. That's fine. You got a little more spice in your life with pastrami, and I'm cool with that.
Okay. The Reuben,
by the way,
the
pastrami
Reuben
didn't even make their list.
Yeah, I was going to say the Reuben was all the way down at number 17.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's in your top five, though, right, Chris? Three and two for you?
Yes, yes. So number three, I have the cheesesteak. Philadelphia cheesesteak. Classic. Kind of overindulgent, but you know what? I like it. I like it wit. I actually, I went to school, originally Wake Forest, with a guy from Philly who, you know, at that point, my experience with cheesesteaks had been they came with onions, provolone, green peppers, and mushrooms. And he told me, no, none of that shit. The only option is wit or without. Talking about the onions. And it was provolone or cheese wits. I don't think I can have it the traditional Philly way. But yeah. I will enjoy it with provolone. I will enjoy it with mushrooms. But cheesesteak, man. Really good up cheesesteak. Nothing like it.
My biggest offense to the cheesesteak is the cheese whiz, and you're talking without it, so I'm with you. It's not on my list, but it's not far off.
It's not a party foul to go provolone or Swiss. And I think I like it with the provolone.
That's preferred. Cheese whiz is gross.
Yeah. Yeah. And number two is the Reuben. I was just thinking about this because, again, like Ryan here, I am my heart and soul's torn between number one and number two. But unlike Jeremy, I like it the traditional way. Rye bread, corned beef, sauerkraut, Russian dressing, Swiss cheese. Just give it to me like that. Just do that. Don't do anything else to it. I love pastrami. Don't change the Reuben. Just give it to me like that is. Just give it to me right now. So good.
I have never had a Reuben sandwich.
We'll have to get you up on that, well, too.
Let me show you the way.
Especially on the Reuben.
I can show you the world, Ryan. I can go Aladdin on you.
You can show me the whole world from your bench.
All right. Ryan, you're number one. Let's get here to the top, to the very top.
Hey, they may have been responsible for a missile crisis, but they made a hell of a sandwich.
You're putting the Cuban all the way at number one.
The Cuban is at number one, and let me tell you why. Because the best sandwich I've ever had, as it pains me to say this, it resides in Ann Arbor, Michigan at Zingerman's. The Cuban conundrum, Cuban style pulled pork, Arkansas peppered ham, Swiss cheese, old fashioned dill pickles, mayo, and hot mustard on a roll.
Hell yeah.
On a roll. Now, when you give it the hot mustard, you get some different flavor profiles from the pickles that they put on there. So it definitely amps it up and it changes the entire experience. I mean, if you take a bite and there's a little bit too much hot mustard, all of a sudden your sinuses are clear for the next like 6 hours. But yeah, the Cuban sandwich is like, it's so good. It has everything I want in a sandwich on it. Like Chris was saying about, as he was like, you know, fantasizing about a Reuben on air. Just give me all the stuff I just listed off and put that in my face hole.
Hell yeah. I'll do my number one. It's not one we've listed off here yet. And it is, in my opinion, forget about the hamburger. This is the most American sandwich out there. This sandwich, you go to any place out there, find it done up a little differently. Maybe the toppings are a little different. But it will tell you about where you are in America when you get this. Coming in at number 11 on the Food Republic list, the fried chicken sandwich. Because, again, very different where you get it. Completely different. You could get a fried chicken cutlet, and, like, maybe it's done up kind of, like, it's just a simple breaded, like, what you would expect for, like, a chicken parmesan or something. Or maybe you're getting it in the Chick-fil-A style, that southern buttermilk chicken. Or just a really, really fried up piece, or just a really big, juicy piece. Maybe it's got some buffalo sauce on it, maybe it's with pickles, or maybe it's with the lettuce and tomato. Either way, the fried chicken sandwich is America. And I have friends who will back me up on this. Like, the fried chicken sandwich is my number one.
I think I'm about to start a civil war, because my number one is the American cheeseburger sandwich.
Oh my god.
See, so
No, this is not a sandwich.
What?
Wait, are we ruling that burgers are not sandwiches?
How can a fried chicken sandwich be a sandwich and a burger not be a sandwich? It's just a different meat.
Things change.
Get out of here, no.
I don't know. I've never considered a hamburger to be a sandwich.
Why
okay,
not?
Okay, weigh in here on Pride of Detroit. Send it to at Pride of Detroit, at Ryan underscore POD, no. At Adequate Host, at Detroit Online. Do you think a hamburger is a sandwich?
It could not be the most...
It meets the criteria.
It could not be a more quintessential sandwich.
It meets the criteria, and burgers can be on melts, which are on, like, just regular pieces of bread, too, so...
I just hate it. Like, nobody... you have to refer to it as a sandwich, I feel like, in order to be a sandwich. Like, nobody...
Well, it wasn't originally a hamburger sandwich? Wasn't that what we used to refer to it as?
Look, language fits the needs of its user.
Wikipedia.
Okay.
A hamburger or burger, cheeseburger, serves with a slice of cheese, is a sandwich consisting of one or more patties of ground beef.
Cool.
Meat.
And all, for all we know, Jeremy went in there and edited it before we got on the podcast.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you refer to it as a tuna melt. You don't say tuna melt sandwich anymore either.
That's fine.
Let me finish my argument.
Talk your shit. Talk your shit, Jeremy.
Number one.
Talk your shit.
Everyone that's listening is well aware that cheeseburger is a sandwich, so hopefully they just fast forward that stupid part right there.
I've changed my stance. Cheeseburgers are sandwiches.
Yes.
Way to fucking torpedo this at the end.
If you want to talk about where you are in the country, cheeseburgers will tell you where you are, because if you're on the West Coast, you got that
know.
Thousand Island dressing, In-N-Out style burger. If you want to go south, maybe they throw some onion rings on that bad boy, some
barbecue sauce.
Hell yeah, give me a Southwestern cheeseburger. Go to Hawaii. I don't even know if they serve these in Hawaii, for it's just what
spam.
They call them. But throw teriyaki sauce and a big old pineapple ring on that guy. Ooh. That I didn't even get to fried egg. Fried egg on a cheeseburger is the best.
Very good. Very good.
Hold on.
Especially if the yolk is just runny enough.
I was going to say, you want the egg yolk runny. You don't want it. You don't want it solidified.
No, you don't. You don't want the yellow solid. No, you want it. You want it sunny side, barely sunny side. Yeah.
Hold on. So I'm totally in on putting the egg on a burger. But how do you guys feel about the recent wave of just like throwing an egg on everything? Like I'm not trying to fuck around with eggs on everything I eat.
Well, I mean, we were just talking about that with the Food Republic list. We've kind of come full circle, haven't we?
that's why I'm on here, man. I torpedo shit and bring it back.
I think eggs belong on sandwiches. It's a good source of protein.
No. Like, I'm totally fine with, like, an egg salad sandwich. Like, having, like, different versions of eggs, but, like, just taking whatever sandwich you have. Like, I wouldn't have a Cubano and all of a sudden just be like, maybe I should throw, like a fried egg on it. Like,
well, I think, as far as a chicken sandwich, I think one of the worst things Chick-fil-A ever did was trying to do, like, a grilled chicken sandwich with, like, eggs on it.
Yeah, no, see, that wouldn't be eaten. Like, I wouldn't enjoy that at all.
There's limits. There's limits to where you can put eggs, I think.
Totally agree.
All right, we've been at this for about half an hour now, and I think this is probably... We could have gone a lot further with this list cast. I know Alex wanted to get in on this, so...
This is important.
Maybe he'll... It's very important, and I'm sure we'll probably revisit this at some later point, too. God forbid. So, let's take a quick break. We'll get to your mail now.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wag.
Mail.
Fucking born ready. Let's do this shit. I'm amped. I'm hot.
I think that's the best way to intro it into the mailbag is Ryan saying right there, I'm hot. So welcome to the mailbag, the Pride of Detroit Ask POD mailbag, and we don't have a lot this week. I think people are finally coming down with the off-season blues, but we're going to get to every question we can. So let's start here Seamus, is it Seamus? Yeah, Seamus 2D2, or Shamu S2D2, I don't know how to read this, from the comments. The Lions have some key contributors headed towards free agency. Who is the player each of you would miss at the most at this point? Bonus round, Africa was great, but do you want a new victory song for next season?
No.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's throw out the first part. Let's just do the bonus. Like, no, Africa's eternal.
I considered maybe changing it up, but I think I agree. Like, there's also some neat variations out there that some people have sent us that we haven't really released yet that maybe are like... There's that holiday one that, I mean, if the Lions would have won during the holidays once, we would have just pushed that one all over, and someone sent us, like, an orchestral, is that a word?
No,
I don't
someone
know.
Someone sent us one. I'm trying to find it now. I wish I could. I'm so sorry to this person. They sent us a version done by, like, a South African choir.
Right.
That was like, cool. Really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, if anybody can find a way to make Fred Durst record a version of Africa.
I found the person. His name is Brett Cousno at B Cousno on Twitter. It's from farside.co.uk. You can find it there. It's like the name of the article is Africa like you've never heard it before, and it's a very, very good rendition.
And to answer your other question, Anquan Boldin. Lions don't have a red zone threat without him.
And I just like Anquan Boldin. I love his career. I'm going to miss him. He's gone. He might come back. I don't know. He might retire. I don't know.
It's all up to his body, he said. If his body can do it again, he'll give it another go around. I hope he does.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to Twitter for the next question. Let's take one from James at Cookie911. So we want Brady and his ever-punchable face to win over Rodgers and his also ever-punchable face if it comes to it. There's no question here, but I guess this is the meteor situation. The Super Bowl, if the Super Bowl is Packers-Patriots, how do you break that down? Where are you going?
I have to go all in on the Packers.
Yeah, I think that's where I finally draw the line and start rooting for the Packers. I can't see the Patriots get another Super Bowl. I can't have that.
Wow, really, guys?
No, I know. I'm completely kidding. I'm going Patriots. There's no way that I could ever back Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not. I cannot see Boston get more happiness. I can't. I'm sorry. I will take the marginal Packers fans having a Super Bowl for one fucking year before they go back to yelling about firing McCarthy than have the Patriots and Boston fans keep wallowing in another fucking ring.
No, I'm so mad at Packers fans for how immature they were when they were 4-6 that if they come back and win a Super Bowl, I'm going to be very, very mad. And I mean, the general rule of thumb, I said this a couple weeks ago, so the Packers are easily my least favorite team now. They've surpassed the Bears by miles. And so my favorite team when the Lions aren't playing is the team that's playing the Packers. So if it's the Patriots on Super Bowl Sunday, it's the Patriots. I'm sorry.
All right, next question. Kirk Ford, do you see the Lions picking up Eric Ebron's fifth-year option at around $8 million per year?
Sorry, guys. The answer is yes.
Yeah, he adds on stuff. He's like too many drops, awful blocking tight end.
He's not a good blocking tight end, and he did have issues with drops, sure, but that completely ignores everything else that he excelled in this year, which he became an elite route runner for tight ends. He did. Not a lot of people noticed, I don't think, but he became a very, very good route runner. He was outrunning safeties. He was beating them when they're, you know, like, if he's just running a fly, sometimes we saw him outrun safeties. The Lions just have to figure out a way to get him the ball more, and I think he could have a 1,000-yard season next year. I know a lot of people aren't feeling that way because he didn't finish the season strong, but I'm still optimistic on Ebron. He's going to come with faults? Sure, whatever. He's not going to be your blocking tight end. Lions aren't going to want that out of him. I'm happy with Ebron at $8 million here. That being said, you know, he does have to improve next year. Otherwise, I would consider moving on after next year.
Eric Ebron's your tight end, and whether or not he's like the traditional tight end going into next season, we'll see. Because maybe if Anquan Boldin doesn't come back, maybe you see Eric Ebron, line up in terms of where he is at in the formation. Maybe you see him kind of take on like the Anquan Boldin role, and the Lions potentially might draft a tight end to fit more of a traditional blocking and, you know, running routes off the line kind of tight end. But yeah, I mean, Eric Ebron's your tight end.
All right, next question here. John Whitaker at Wyvol, friend of the show. What's a good spring show to watch, and why is it the Young Pope? Got another question here related. Respected Madman at KH Maker D. He's got two parts, but again, kind of going in this. Let's take his first part here. First, is the Young Pope actually good or comically so bad it is good? Jeremy, why don't you answer this first before I get into the Young Pope?
Well, let me answer the springtime shows, because there are some shows coming up that I'm excited about. Rick and Morty
Young Pope?
Yes, other than Young Pope, there are actually other TV shows on. Rick and Morty is supposed to come back soon. We don't know when. It's been close to coming back for several months. But when that does, watch that. In the meantime, catch up. Watch them all, I think, on Hulu. Is that right, Ryan?
You can find them on Hulu.
Cool. Americans is also coming back in March. If you don't know Americans, that's on Amazon Prime. Catch up there.
Atlanta. Also, Atlanta won't be back until 2018 because Star Wars is stupid.
Yep, that is true. And then last one, Man Seeking Woman. Just started its third season, I think. FX or FXX or one of those. Check it out.
I'm sorry, you haven't talked enough about the Young Pope.
Well, I mean, it's all leading up to the best show on TV. No, Young Pope is I'm intrigued.
About to show my ass on this podcast. I know this isn't a visual medium.
Okay. Ryan doesn't like the Young Pope because it isn't a show that's 4 years old, so he hasn't had a chance to watch it yet.
But okay, I just want to be honest for a second. Put the irony and the memes aside. Like, I think it has somehow, through all of that, it is a good show. It's a very good show. I think Jude Law is acting like he cuts a very sinister figure.
Yeah,
I think someone described Young Pope as basically being like House of Cards if House of Cards didn't actually in reality suck.
Oh, okay.
I actually, I was coming up with the House of Cards comparison in my head a little bit too, except it feels a little more dark and brooding and
well, it doesn't
have like
me,
the silly side to it.
Do you remember? Really, I thought it was pretty silly. Like they really kind of lambasted some prestige tropes. Like that intro was kind of bizarre, and then some of the music choices, like there are just moments of extreme tension, and then Jude Law will say just in a deadpan voice, "That was a joke" or something.
Right,
and it just completely cuts the tension.
Yeah,
and it's great.
You're right.
But
you're right.
I do you remember, Jeremy? You're kind of a little more in tune with TV. Do you remember there were like two shows almost at the same time about the Borgias? The Borgia family. One was with Jeremy Irons in it.
I don't know.
I think
what that
one
is.
Was like one was like a BBC show and the other was an Italian show Netflix picked up. It was just about the Borgia family, which was like this one, what was it, the 15th century or so, it was a Spanish family that assumed control of the papacy. But, you know, again, Jeremy Irons was in one of these shows, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of that, except far less weird white people fucking.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. It's just called The Borgias with Jeremy
Irons.
There
were two. There was Borgias and The Borgias.
Okay. Yeah,
but it's,
Borgia.
Yeah, and then, but this is, of course, you know, modern times and everything. And again, a lot of this is based on the acting of Jude Law, which is really good.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting show. I'm going to stick with it.
I think they're putting out the second episode tonight, Monday night.
Really?
So, yeah.
There you go.
So I'll probably check that out when we're done here, too. Yeah. It started as a joke. Everyone was making jokes on Twitter, and yet, you know, through meme magic or irony poisoning or whatever you want to call it, it has somehow become good.
HBO, man, it's solid. As long as it's not The Brink, it's a good show.
Or Ballers.
Okay, or Ballers. or Entourage, damn it. Okay, there are a lot of counterexamples.
Hey,
but
hold on. The first three seasons of Entourage were
passably good.
They were passably good. I also watched those 4 years after they came out.
When they were being replayed on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Those are right. Syndicated on Comedy Central?
They were for a while, yeah.
Oh, me, oh my.
Wasn't there a movie, too?
There was.
Like last year?
There was.
It was awful.
Ari Gold's a good character, though.
Okay, next question here. Smog's Gold Coin. Did you ever read the Berenstain Bears book? Is it Berenstain or Berenstain with an A? Apparently the spelling is Berenstain, so it's like Berenstain, like stain.
Hey,
at the end.
Jeremy, can we get a ruling?
I don't know why you're going to. I actually have an interesting.
Wow. Wow. Holy shit.
Oh, wait. Oh, now I get what you're saying, you son of
Holy
a bitch.
Holy shit.
What? I was just asking.
No. Okay, well, I think this is a common
way, to
question.
To answer it first. First off, just to answer it real quick off the bat, yes, I used to read them.
I did, too.
Yeah, me too. But like, it's spelled like Berenstain Bears, right? Berenstain instead of Berenstain, like bear. Like, it should just be Berenstain Bears.
No,
that's what makes sense.
It's Berenstain, so it's Beren, it's spelled with two E's, and then the last part, Stein, it's spelled like stain, like you would spell stain.
Right, it's spelled completely, like, you're making a kid's book with bears in it. How's it not Berenstain? Berenstain
because
Bears.
Not everyone wants to do a fucking pun joke.
But it's a kid's book. Instead you're going Berenstain, like, is that a word? Is that a name?
Yes, no. For the Bears, the Berenstain Bears.
No, I don't like it. So it'll forever be the Berenstain Bears. Berenstain Bears. I don't know.
Jesus Christ, this is a terrible idea to take this question. Big Slick McDick asks, would it raise ethical concerns if I uploaded my brain into an Amazon Echo before or after I die? First off, as a preamble to this, we did all spend one day last week watching two Google Homes talk to each other on Twitch, and it was a horrifying experience, I'll just say that.
I mean, it was almost indecipherable from a normal internet argument. That's how scary it was.
Except for the weird, like, BDSM subplot in there, where each of them were demanding the other to
be their
mask.
There's nothing like that on the internet. Have you guys experienced that Amazon Echo thing at all?
No, I will never fucking get those things. Those seem like they'll be spying on me all the time. And you know who's going to be spying on me on the other end? Andrew Cotto.
Yeah, Andrew Cotto's listening to all of your Amazon Echo requests. But Sierra's dad had one, and it just seemed like it was a... It seemed like it was kind of like a gimmick thing. Like, he would just ask he would just ask it to tell him a joke every once in a while. Like, I'm not sure if it was, would ever really be useful.
I don't trust those things to, like, make my orders for me. Just like I don't trust, like, I will never buy one of those Amazon Rush buttons. Just out of the fear of someone coming into my house and, like, clicking it 20 times.
Oh, I do not have one-click buying enabled on my Amazon account either.
No, that's the same, it's the same thing with an Amazon Echo.
Nope. I'm good. I'm all right on that.
Did you guys hear about the news report that, like, and... There was a news report about someone who whose Amazon Echo accidentally ordered them a dollhouse, and then everyone who was watching that news report, not everyone, but like a bunch of people who were watching that that had an Amazon Echo, had the Amazon Echo order the dollhouse because of the report.
The future's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
We're on the road to WrestleMania.
Okay, couple more questions here. By the way, I'm sorry, we forgot the second part of Madman's question. It was, would you make the Lions an offensive team or a defensive team?
That's a hard
question.
Por que
no los dos?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously want a mixture of both, but...
But what I mean, this is the age-old question, but I think, you know, my opinion's changed. I used to say offense. Now I'd say, after watching a lot of these teams go far in the playoffs, yeah, I think I want the team with the best defense, really. Like... Watching Denver last year really changed me.
But I mean, like, you look at the playoffs these years, the best defensive teams, the Giants, the Chiefs, they're out now, right?
Yeah, they are out, but their offense has also sucked a lot.
I mean, if anything, I think I've seen this kind of narrative take off already. These four teams that are in the playoffs have proved that you need a great quarterback, right?
Yes.
You got Roethlisberger, Brady, Rodgers, Matt Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan having an MVP season, yeah.
I mean, basically all those teams are built on really good offenses, are they not? I mean, maybe the Steelers are probably the biggest counterexample there, but...
But they've got Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. They've got a good offense.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you build a really, really great offense, it can take you far. I don't know. That's why I ultimately thought the Packers were going to fail, and I thought the Falcons were going to fail, but I was wrong. One of those teams is going to make it to the Super Bowl with a bad defense. Worth thinking about. But I think before we switch on to a new question, I also want to say that I think every year we do this where we look at this one particular year and decide that's how you build a team. So last year, the Broncos made the playoffs, so you got to have a really, really great defense to make the Super Bowl. Now a good offense is going to win the Super Bowl, and we'll probably all say, oh, you have to have a really good quarterback, really good offense to win the Super Bowl. Truth is, it doesn't matter. If you're really good at least one of them, you're going to make it to the postseason.
Ryan, did you have any thoughts?
I want the Lions to draft a lot of defensive players in the draft, and hopefully they spend a lot of their high draft picks on defensive players. That's not saying that I want them to be either a defensive team or a team that's so incredibly potent on offense. I just want them to be more balanced. I just don't want to have the 32nd ranked defense. I just don't want that. I don't want that.
Well, that brings us to another question we have here from Knuckle Deep. With so many holes in a weak roster that lacks playmakers, does anyone find the Lions boring to watch? At least when we had Calvin Johnson, you might see something special, but we literally have no playmakers on this team and really not much to get excited for come next season. Ryan, do you want to take this?
If you find no players on this roster that are worth watching, if you find no players that don't excite you or provide any quote-unquote playmaking or big playability, where were you in week 9? When Golden Tate front flipped and put his taint on Andrew Sadejo's face after
his golden taint,
after forearm shivering Harrison Smith into the ground. Like, how is that not exciting? Like, Amir Abdullah is coming back to watch Theo Riddick come out of the backfield, make catches and put people's ankles to dust. I mean, the Lions have plenty of offensive playmakers that provide excitement, in my opinion. In my opinion, they do. I mean, Matthew Stafford's the focal point, and then when you have guys who have the agility of a Golden Tate or a Theo Riddick, you have tons of guys who can make SportsCenter top 10 plays, if you will.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This question's revisionist. Like, you cannot be saying that after watching all these comeback wins this season.
This is one of the most exciting seasons in Detroit Lions memory. I think it's right up there with the 2011 season. And to call it this team boring, I don't know, man. I understand they were not very good and pretty bad down the stretch, but, like, I mean, didn't have Amir Abdullah, didn't have Theo Riddick, and you know, teams maybe targeted Golden Tate and shut him down a little bit, but where were you guys? Come on now. I think where this narrative is coming is because there was this quote from Caldwell in his farewell presser about his team not needing more playmakers, and I think some of the beat writers out there went along with the narrative that the Lions don't have any playmakers and they need more playmakers. And sure, that would help, but I don't know how many shiny baubles this team really needs. Because once Abdullah is back, on the defense, they definitely need more playmakers. I will give you that, because Darius Slay was pretty much the only one making big plays on the defensive side of the ball. He had two huge interceptions this year. But offensively, this offense can click. And when it does, it's scary. And I think they don't really need another huge piece to do that.
All right, last question here. Once again, one more from Big Slick McDick. Never referring to him as Evan ever again. The young Pope, does he fuck? Well,
John C.
I need to get that Listcast theme done too. So shit, probably not tonight. But
what's the Listcast theme?
I haven't figured it out yet. I need to do some imaging for it.
Listcast.
I need some like voice actors. Yeah, do that along with like overhauling our intro. It's like, and now listening, you know, that British woman who's doing you know, every fucking podcasting existence. And now back to the Pride of Detroit podcast.
The PODcast.
I think we're getting all the audio hooks right now. We got Brian singing the Listcast. We got the faux British woman from both of you.